Kof Vov Teves, Sunday the 29th of December, Rabbi Matthias Yohu Halberstadt, Kohanim Flying Over Cemeteries. This week's Torahway has been sponsored by a grateful admirer to our late Magid Shir and friend, Rabbi Yosef Feilich Oliver Sholem.
I've structured the Shir today to first explain a tiny little bit from on top the halachic, the basic halachic issues involved in the psak of the Shaila, whether Kohanim could are allowed to fly over basic forests, on which the poskim have paskin that it is forbidden, it is Issa d'oraisa. After that, if we have time, we'll discuss a practical understanding of how the issue is very, very clear, and that it is not a situation of a sophic, of a doubt whether the planes are flying over the cemetery, and it is 100% definite. Okay, the first part is the halachic discussion, the second half, technical facts. I'll give a little introduction, which I've become very emotional about. The Pasuk says, in Parashas Chukas, Zoyis Chukas HaTorah, says Rashi, the Satan and the Goyim will be chepering Klal Yisrael. Ma tam yesh b'mitzvah zu. This mitzvah of Tumah, what's Tumah? Tumah? Funny thing. How do you block that? The Fichach Kosav Bar, the Torah already anticipated this and added an extra word, Chukah, Gezerahi Melefonai. It's a decree, Ve'en Lachem Rashus Lahara Achara. It does not have to make sense. This is fact. Now, why have I said this? Because in April this year, there was a scandal. Somebody went in a bag. This person, by the way, is doing absolutely nothing as far as the halacha is concerned. He did not close the bag in any possible way which the halacha would have possibly suggested that it might be good. But whatever it is, he did it. And somebody took a picture of him and put it on his Facebook or God knows what. And from there, it went for around the various different news agencies over the world, giving their bizarre sight, all sorts of headlines about it. And one of the Israelis said that the Rambam must have thought this fellow was a clown. But, okay, if you think that that already gives you enough to see what Rashi has foreseen, what the Medrash foresays, that it happened in the Yediot Achronot, 850 comments of ridicule on the webpage about this. 850 comments. One of the boys in the airport in transport ministry asked me whether it hurts my feelings that all this happened. So I told him, on the contrary, Rashi in Parashas Chukas already says that the Satan and the Goyim are going to make an issue about this. In 2,000 years, I'm not aware in history that this actually made headlines. So if this made headlines and getting the ridicule, then it's happened. Now, the first thing I want to explain is a few guidelines in Tumas Meis. Zois HaTorah Adam Ki Yomus Bo Oihel. The Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Tumas Meis explains that a Meis will give out Tumah in three ways. By touching, by carrying. That means even if a person's wearing a glove, he's not touching, but he's carrying the weight of the Meis. Or in a Oihel. And all of these are properly Min HaTorah, as the Rambam brings a pasuk, Hanogea B'meis L'chol Nefesh Adam V'tom Yeshivas Yomim. And the pasuk also says, Kol Haba El Ha'oihel, whatever enters into the Oihel will become Tomei for 7 days. Now, one thing we don't even need to go at length is the fact that it says, L'nefesh L'itamei Ba'amov, and the Kohen is not allowed to become Tomei in any of these ways to a mace. Now, the Rambam, 10 halachas later, explains a little bit what Tumas Oihel is. Tumas Oihel is not relevant in all the other Tumas, Zav and Nida and Mutzera. Tumas Oihel is unique to Tumas Meis. And Tumas Oihel splits up into two parts. The first part is, the Rambam puts it the other way around. We would have said the first part is going into the Oihel, as the Pasuk says. But the Rambam puts before that, whether the person acted as a Oihel, or doesn't have to be a person or a kli, even a needle. Now, why does Rambam say even a needle? Because a needle doesn't have a tefach. We know that the size of a oihel is a tefach, as we're going to see. But a needle doesn't have a tefach, and it still gets tumas oihel from being directly on top of the mace. Now, that is what we can call as mahil. acting as Oihel, and the other option of Oihel is going into an Oihel, into a roof covering, together with the mace. Now the Rambam, 13 chapters later, says the following, Kol tefach al tefach barum tefach, every tefach space of tefach by a tefach cube, that is in centimeters, 8 centimeters going to the small shear, or 9.6 centimeters, 96 millimeters on the big shear. That is the minimum of an oihel. As we've explained, now an oihel does not only spread the tumor, the Rambam here brings that the oihel can block tumor. The oihel will spread the tumor and will block the tumor from going higher. Now, if the oihel is not there, then the tumor will just go all the way up, as we know, but kasva oila ad rokia. Now, where's the rokia? I've had various well-meaning individuals without capels on telling me, well, would you try and tell the Rabbonim that maybe they should reconsider defining the rokia? So I asked them whether they should give me a suggestion. So one of them said, well, 500 feet, 1,000 feet. So I said, well, you know, when we're landing over here, the plane's at about 1,600 feet. So even if you go 10,000 feet where the air pressure changes, the atmosphere, the oxygen levels go down, and that's where they start pressurizing the planes, that won't help you. So I told them, really, you should really know that whatever you've got the pull of gravity might still be Rokia. Oh, you got a point there. But I did have one well-meaning gentleman who said that maybe at 400 feet, because the gravity, the pull of gravity weakens as of 400 feet. And because of that, the planes are not allowed to go onto autopilot before that altitude, because it's more dangerous. They prefer to have the pilot's hands-on control at that very, very low altitude. Now, there's a perek in Arlo's perek Ches, where the Mishnayos bring four categories of oihel. You have some which can block the tumor and will spread the tumor. You have those which will block the tumor without spreading. You can have those which will spread without blocking. For example, if there is something which is mekabel tumor, which is being the oihel or supporting the oihel, then that oihel will spread the tumor but will not block the tumor from going further. And now the important category for us today, the category of those which will not bring the tumor, they will not spread the tumor, and they won't block it either. They are totally non-existent. And the Mishnah gives us a long list. What interests us today, somebody who's jumping, now when he's jumped, he's in the air. Or somebody who's leapt, if he's leaping, or he's jumped. Or a bird that's flying. Or a talis which is flapping in the wind, which is disconnected. Or a ship which is floating on the water. Now, as far as the halacha goes, there's no difference between a rowing boat or a helicopter. Neither of them are sitting on the ground. Scientifically, water is a gas, correct? Water is a gas, it's just in liquid form. So there's not much difference between a plane floating on the water or a hot air balloon up in the sky. Aerodynamics, as far as the halacha goes, a ship is the same halacha of an aeroplane. So really this shaila we're talking about now is not something new for our millennium or the last millennium, but the shaila has really been relevant ever since ships have been floating on water. Now the Mishnah over here says that it will not act as an oihel, not to bring tumah and not to block tumah. I'll give you an example how it doesn't bring. So our kohen wants to have a picnic, and the place that he found was to lean against the wall of the cemetery, and about 2 feet away from him there's already a grave. But there's no problem because there's a wall or a fence. Comes along a big bird with a wingspan of 1.8 meters, an albatross or an eagle, something like that, and flies over him. Did the kohen become tamei or not? The answer is no. Because the Mishnah says that a flying bird does not become an oihel at all. Not because it's a bird, because it's flying. The Gemara in Sukkah speaks about cows, even though they're living, that they possibly can become an oihel to block the tumor. Now, talking about flying, most people who have learned dafiyomi and other things will say, yeah, oil zoruk lav shmei oihel, or shmei oihel. There is a machlokes tanoim about something called an oil zoruk, a thrown oihel. Now, Tosis in Nozeh and in Chagiga explains that the issue that the Tanoim argue about, or Oihel Zoruk, is not the issue of flying. The issue of flying, there's no machloikus, because the oil which is flying does not even bring the tumah. It's not an oil at all. However, an oil zoruk will bring the tumah, will spread the tumah, it just will not block it according to that tana. So therefore, anybody who wants to discuss the shayla of airplanes with oil zoruk, oil zoruk is a moving oil. Toyota says where people are carrying it. In the olden days, the ladies used to have four slaves and they used to carry a chair. That sort of idea is an oil zaruk. Or if it's on a wagon, the Mishnah Melech discusses whether a wheel is called, whether it's called static. It's just the fact that it's moving, but it's not zaruk. That's not for us to discuss now, because we're talking about flying objects. But the important point, that a flying object will not be an oil at all. At all. Whatsoever. Now comes the question, if it's not an oil at all, then what's the problem to be flying over it? Now there is a Rash and a Rosh in Taras, Pirik Dalad, Mishnah Gimel, who says that if it does not spread Toma, then it won't even spread Toma on itself. Now the Chazanish, and I don't know if it was beforehand, well, it was printed in 1933, Kapei Aaron, Reb Aaron Alevi Epstein, who was a Rav in Prague, it was printed in Munkach, I have no idea who he was. He wrote a very, very clear tshuva on this shayla. Now, I don't know if he was writing it to Maisa, or as soon as he heard the idea that there's an aircraft which can people can fly, so he thought about the halachic implications and wrote a tshuva about it. For us, it's halacha l'maisa. Now, he also brings this Rash and Rosh. Now, the problem is, as we said before, the Rambam brings an example of mahil, a needle. Now, a needle is definitely not an oihel in the fact that it doesn't have a tefach. A needle cannot spread tumah. And that's one of the big questions on the Rash and the Rosh. Besides that, the Chazanish brings a Braisa and the Gemara Nozeh, which says, not like that. So therefore, the Chazanish and the Kape Aaron both put the Rash and the Rosh aside. Now, coming to leaf through the poskim of our generation, Rav Eliyashiv Zechonin Vrocha quoted the Chazanish, and wrote very clearly that Kohen can't fly over the base of Kvaros. Here's a letter from the Vedats of the Eda Charedis in Tovshin Samach Beis, signed by the Rav Reb Yisrael Yaakov Fish. I think none of these names, I think only one of them was still alive. This was, by the way, the last signature of Rabbi Yomin Rabinovich. Rav Yisrael Yaakov Fish, when somebody once asked him, well, maybe you find a kula, it's so difficult. So he said, you should know one thing, maybe now you're stuck in Eretz Yisrael. You should know that when Mashiach comes, the whole Klal Yisrael will have to be jammed into 11 Amos at the beginning of the Azara, and the Kohenim will be able to go further, and Bein Olam B'la Mizbech and the Heichel. L'tzorech Avoida. You should know that's much more valuable, those few Amos more, than having the whole world where you can fly. That's a message for Kohenim, if they think, feel hard done by. They shouldn't feel so hard done by. This Rav Ozner also wrote, there's a letter that Rameh, I missed that. Rameh Bransdorfer wrote a letter telling the Hamoudiyah newspaper that they can trust what I was saying, because what, Yeshiva Bachar should listen to him? Problem was that the government gave out a letter saying that the problem was sorted out, and it wasn't. So they wanted to know my word against theirs. So they wrote a very nice letter over here. Now, let's just address another issue. In the Kvarim itself, people they don't put the body in the ground and then pour all the mud on top. The way they bury in Eretz Yisrael, they don't use wooden boxes, but they have concrete blocks, which they put alongside of the mace, and then slabs on top. Now, in there, you would understand that there is an oihel of a tefach. Now, if that's the case, then what's the problem? Why can't you fly over the basic forest? I know the Gemara says that Rabba Bavu met Elion not in the basic forest, and he said, excuse me, Malakoin the basic forest. Now, that's something that we've been brought up from when we're little boys. Children, Kohen don't go to basic forest, not Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Kohenim go to the coastal, and that's it. Kohenim don't go to the basic forest. My grandmother, here's as angry, don't tell me. Kohen goes in the basic forest on a one-way ticket. Now, that's a question that is a very, very good question. The Gemara in Brochus brings that the Tanoim say they used to jump from Oren to Oren. They used to jump over the Aronos to go and see a king. To see, and the Gemara says that you should see what royal the way the royals behave and get treated, that we'll be able to understand the covered what should be given to Mashiach when he comes. And the Gemara says, because the Aroinus have a Poseach Tefach in them, they have a space of a Tefach. If it has a space of a Tefach, then what should be the problem? So in Lamaisa, there's a Machlokas Rambam and two Balei HaTosfos V, the Rashi and the Raiva. The Rashi in Noze, which is in the Poskim considered less Rashi than the regular Rashi, but the Raiva also says it very clearly, and therefore we can take Rashi into consideration. The Rambam and Tosfos hold that if there is a closed space in the Keva, sealed, then the tumor will spread inside that space and then break through, not only on the area of the tumor of the mace itself, rather the whole grave, the whole airspace of the grave will be tummy. That is shita of the Rambam and Tosfos. Two Balei HaTosfos have a slight machlokas, which I can't remember exactly the point, in Baba Basra Kuf Amud Beis. In the case of Mishnah, discusses it. But one thing is clear, and that's the way the poskim take on very clearly, that there is a tumah of a keva, and the tumah is bakas va'oila against the whole keva. However, Rashi and the Raivad hold that this will block the tumah. According to the Rambam and Tosfos, the Gemara in Brachas is talking that it wasn't sealed, the Aron. There was an air hole for breathing, not for breathing, but there was a tefah hole, and that way the air is not sealed. The airspace of the cave is not sealed, and possibly the way they used to bury in caves, open with the opening from the side, they didn't used to seal off the opening totally. Now, according to the first shita, in our case, it's become even worse because of this tefach in the cave, because now, if you're working out the square meterage of the tumah in the basic forest, it's become much, much more, because of the whole space of the keva. However, according to the second opinion, the tefach space will actually stop the tumah, and there are tshuvas who want to use this as a backbone to finding a heter, b'shas adchak, for a kohen to be able to fly over the basic chloros. However, I just made a little diagram, some thermal imaging here of inside the grave. Now, the white is the shroud, the tachrichin. Now, according to the shita of the Raivad, the tumah will actually only be on top of the white. That means if you get a needle, a knitting needle that has to be a bit long, and stick it in between the legs, or in between the arm and the body of the mace, it will not become tummy. Why? Because it's not on top. There's I mixed up. According to Rashi and the Raivad, if there's a space, then it's not that, then there's no tummy whatsoever. According to the Rambam, the whole area is tummy. Now, if this is filled up with sand and there's no hollow, then the tumor will only be exactly on top of the white. And in that case, you put the knitting needle in between the areas which is not on top, the knitting needle will be tohor. Now, I sent a shayla to Rav Yaakov Ruja, who's the world expert in burial. He's Rav of Zaka, and the biggest Chevra Kedisha of Tel Aviv. And he is present every time they have to exhume a keva, for court reasons, whatever, he fights it till the end, and he will not allow them to do it without himself being present. And on the Rav Ozna's good days, he wouldn't give the heter without having spoken to Rav Ozna first. Very powerful man. I asked him, in this particular basic forest, how did they find when they opened up the graves? Did they find that the graves actually had kept their hollow, or they're filled? The reason I asked this was because somebody who's very much into engineering told me that from what he understands, in that area, the rainwater should be washing silt, the fine sand, between the cracks of the slabs. And he reckoned about 10 centimetres a year. But if this basic cross is 30 years old, even though it was a centimetre a year, it's all full with sand. But he said he's never been there. He can tell me theory, I should ask Rav Ruja what in real. And I wrote in the Shaila very clearly that what the answer he's giving on this Shaila would deem many tshuvas written by the poskim as void because they'll be irrelevant. Because of this shit, I wrote it very clearly. And this is why he answered, as you say, and at the times when I was there, when they opened Kforim in this basic forest, they were all full of sand. Therefore, unfortunately, there's many tshuvas in Ramnos Nigeshtetna's tshuva, and he's worrying, trying to make a sophic out of it, but after this Eidos, it's really a bit difficult. This, now, this time round, the Bedatz, which is new Dayanim ready, Rav Moshe Shtemach, the guy with Rav Weiss. Rav Nissim Karelitz wrote as well. Now let's summarize what we've done before we get onto the practical business. Mahel over Tuma is the same as going into the oil. Just like a coin can't go into the oil when they're saying a hesped there and the mace is there, or into the fridge room, then a coin can also not be on top of the Tuma. A flying oil is not an oil whatsoever to block the Tuma, and it won't even bring Tuma. I mean, sometimes you can have something which is a Chumra Midrabanon, but how do you catch that? Because if the oil will spread the Tuma, not block, because the Rabbanon can't be mate something, they can make a Chumra, but they can't be mate something which is properly asa. And therefore, if in this case you see that the Tuma will not spread, you see that it is definitely not an oil whatsoever, and it's not the Rabbanon that you say maybe we're going to cover the Brius or something.
Even if it's made from titanium and aluminium.
Well, I'm not talking about the aeroplane at all. No, because it's flying, irrelevant what. Because it's flying, the fact that it's flying and not static, that's why it deems it void as being oil. Irrelevant to what the materials are. Now we discussed the machlokas about a tefach space in the keva. In our case over here, it's not relevant due to the settlement caused by the rainwater. And we also discussed the opinion of the Rash and the Rosh, which both the Chazanish and the Kapei Aaron put aside. Now this is then. Now we're going to the practical ground. We've only got 8 minutes left. No, 10 minutes left. Okay, this is a letter. When this time round, the Rav Nissim Karelitz is based in, called me to interview me or cross-examine, more accurately, to find out exactly why I'm saying that Kohenim shouldn't be flying. So it's not based in. Have to give out a letter, but we have to check up. They interrogated me for 2.5 hours. Thorough interrogation. I wouldn't recommend anybody to fall into their hands. Try and make your settlements yourselves. Anyway, I asked the manager of the operations in the Civil Aviation Authority that really it's his job to go to the basin, not mine. He's the professional, and it's his office. He couldn't come because he was already booked up for a meeting. His deputy was also booked up. So he may do by sending this letter to the basin, telling them that we have no differences of opinion on operational models of this airport. Now over here is an aerial picture of Gush Dan, south part of Gush Dan, a bit of Palmachim sand dunes. Over here is the airport. And over here you see this white thing, cemetery coloured. Well, you see all the colours of the Matzevas there. See, we don't have many flowers in the cemetery, so it won't come out colourful. Now, when you're talking about runways, each runway is given a number. Now, the number is the degrees, the angle that the runway lies or falls, and they just knock off the last zero. So therefore, 08 would really mean 080, 080. Now over here, the main runway in Israel is 0826, and Heathrow is 0927, both the same direction. In Israel, they're across. I think it was built by the British way before. And the runway which they used to land on, which is currently out of use, which is making the problems, is 300-120, which is on the markings is 1230. Over here, this is from Heathrow, just showing how each runway tip has a, that the pilot in the sky can see exactly if his instruments are going wrong. He can use his compass to try and get straight. Over here, I've put the coordinates, not coordinates, the degrees on the background of the runway. That's pointed out, the runway 0826, you can see it's running on 80 degrees to 260, and the closed runway, 1230. There we are. Now, the cemetery we're talking about is not a little one. We're talking about a cemetery where I used Google Maps to take measurements. The green line going from northwest to southeast is 1,100 metres, which is very, very big. It's two junctions on the motorway. So that's one junction there, we see the 20, and down below is another junction. Two entrances of the basic forest, two different junctions on the motorway. And on the width ways, it's 920 metres. It's a very, very big basic forest. Why am I showing this? Because if somebody's going along and say, well, they don't fly that accurate. Well, first of all, if somebody tells you they don't fly accurate, I suggest you stay here and never fly in a plane. Because if he misses the runway, I landed in City Airport last week. If you'd have missed a little bit, you'd have been in the water. Got my feet wet. Now, over here, this is the aerial picture highlighted, the airport against the cemetery. Now, all the routing information is all legal. It's law. It's no playing around, no, do this, do that. Each transport ministry has an aviation authority, CAA, or in America it's not civil, they're federal there. And they give out all the routes. And they have to be kept exactly. Now, there will be some sort of deviation for mistakes, but today, as the computers are getting more powerful, the mistakes are getting much, much less. I can tell you one accurate mistake will be, since they're using a decimal point of the minute, is about 180 meters. At this point in the world, I don't know what's around here. It depends what the distance, how many meters the minutes are. That's the website where I got lots of the information from the Aviation Authority. Now, there's another thing which they give out, things which are not quite routing information. It's called a NOTAM, Notice to Airmen. Now, this is where they get information that, they cannot land big planes early in the heavy planes going to America can't take off before 1 o'clock, and the airport is closed, aerodrome, ADS aerodrome, closed for landing daily between 1 and 1.55 to enable those big planes to fly out on the way, which is good for the Koinim. The navigation systems work on landing is ILS, instrument landing system. Now, there's three categories of it. Of category, I can't remember, one or three, but one of them can land totally, totally blind. The only problem landing in a blizzard of snow is if he's going to skid on the runway. The pilot does not need the window at all. Once one of the Rabbonim asked me, maybe it's a suffix. I told him that even if you go and speak to a pilot and ask him for the information, you should know with the way today, you've got to find out when the pilot says right or left, because today he works on screens. You don't have to look out the window. So he said, when you say right or left, you think the pilot's looking out the window like that in a boat. He could be sitting with his back to the window and the screen's on the back wall. I said, really? So you see, he didn't even know that I was joking. But it could be. If they're landing ILS, he doesn't even have to be in the plane, really. You can go like the Docklands train. Now, there's another thing which is coming up, which they're not relying on it totally. It's called the RNAV, Area Navigation. Area Navigation is something which is based on GPS some sort. And they use that for landing, but I don't think they use it yet at night. That means they have to get the pilot has to be able to oversee it still, visually. And SID is the standard instrument departure. That is the departures, how they leave, get into the air until the first point of where they report. That's called a SID. Now, first of all, I'll explain the landing problem quickly. The landing problem, the ILS guides the plane down. You can see over here the diagram. I'll give you imagine it as if you're in the fog and somebody's got a very powerful torch and standing in shul till your house. So you don't need to know right or left. You just need to see that you're in the light and you'll get to shul. And when the steps, because he's higher, so you've got to go up. And if you're out, then now that's roughly how the ILS works, guiding the plane to touchdown on the exact spot on the runway, bringing him down from the altitude. Now, for that, they need to be straight on, directly straight like a ruler, for about 10 nautical miles. 10 nautical miles is meters? 1,852, I think. Or 56. It's a long time since I was in school. Now, that's quite a way. Now, for that, they have to go out, be straight on land. If there's something clicks off thing, they abort the tape, they abort the landing, circle around and start again. Now, doing that at night, it's very easy to find out if he goes over the basic forest. Just to get a ruler, draw a straight line off the runway, as you can see here, and you'll see it'll take us straight through the basic forest. That's the beam. That's military training area, which they're not allowed to fly, which is important to know because that's why they prefer to move them north than south. And that's the landing line, plotted with Google Earth points. And it works straight out over the basic forest. And the basic forest is big enough that even if you're going to say that it might deviate by 200-300 meters, I think he's still in. Now the takeoff problem at night, because they're landing from the sea at night with the ILS, they have to take off in the other direction. You can't have them taking off and landing because if you You know, he says, I don't listen to you anymore, and you might end up with 800 people in the base of Chorus. So, therefore, it's forbidden for taking off and landing, even though they did do it when the last, I think last year when they had a war in Gaza, so the missile system was protecting them from the south, and that was, the planes, they were scared, could mess it up. So what they did was, they had them taking off and landing towards the east, and as soon as they took off, they turned a sharp left turn up north, but there was no planes on the tarmac for takeoff when there was a plane landing. It drove them absolutely crazy. Now this is a radar check, which was also, it got arrived late, but they asked it for the base team. Now this is 100% accurate, this is off their radar, proper radar. And you can see the red line is the landings, this heavy red line, and the blue ones are the takeoffs. The other ones which you see flying around could be light aircraft as well, which also get picked up on the radar. But you see all the heavy line are the ones flying accurately. There's absolutely not very much Suffolk involved. Now over here, this is our danger area from a point called Noga. Now over here, that point is 6. It's the most central point in the navigation in the whole area. I think I've overstepped my time. We're almost finished. Now over here, that is the line, this yellow line, or green, I don't know what colour it is. From over here, that's the point from Noga. And you see it goes straight through the basic forest with the purple line. Now, I don't think there's any danger in the fact that they crisscross, because when he's landing on the purple line, he's less than 2,000 feet, and when he's on the green line, he's way over 5,000 feet already. That's our basic forest. That's how we've zoomed in on it. And that's these are the navigation points. Now, one thing which can change things between night and day, which will override the rules, is the wind direction. If there's a strong east wind of more than 5 or 6 knots, well, if 5 knots for takeoff, 10 knots for landing, but since you've got land and takeoff in the same way, it doesn't make much difference if you're using the same runway. And that will sometimes, when they have a strong east wind, which is not, it's quite rare, even though this December there's been quite a few of them, but during the day they'll also be problematic for Conan. You see, you can find everything out today. There's no secrets anymore. Now, the solution to the problem in 2002, when they were flying westwards in a way which is okay today. Now, the problem there was, again, same basic forest, same points of navigation points. As they came down to that area, the problem was the way over here, oh, we've got it bigger over here, that is the route. Now, the plane is not a motorbike. An airplane is not a motorbike. It can't come to point 6. And then stop at the traffic light and then be straight on line. He's got to cut a corner. Now if he cuts the corner, he's going to go straight through the basic forest also. Now, this line will demonstrate it. If he cuts the corner, then even if he cuts it a bit closer, a bit further, he's definitely in the basic forest. And that is why the PSAC was in 2002 in Tovshin Samach Beis that Kohanim can't leave Israel. But there was no landing problem in those days. Now what they did was, they put out a notum, which they redid it now, they forgot to, when they updated in December 12, they forgot to put that in on the paper, so they put it in as a notum, and the whole world was shrying about it. The European aviation watchdog tells them off the whole time, no, you're not allowed to have a flyover point. And what they do is they tell the plane to fly to the point, and only then to start turning. Now that will give the plane a big bow, I'll take him out of the basic chorus. And it's only for that reason that they do it. And at the moment, this Moti Shmueli gave instructions not to answer any questions about it, and that's the way it's going to be. Now, what they're doing now, as they're changing the whole system, they want to move that point 6 to a position that when they fly by that point, they're still out of the basic chorus. But that's what happened. But that they did especially for us, and none of the press know about this. If they would know about it, they'd have plenty to talk about. Now, when they're flying around the basic forest, you can see here, I made the measurement on Google Earth, it's about 250 meters, sometimes even closer. In the olden days, before the days where you could track this stuff on screen, I used to sit over, there's a factory over here, I used to sit here and use the electricity pylon running along this road over here, which gives a pretty good direction. Now, if you're standing down below, exactly under the line, as far as I'm concerned, somebody's drawn a line on the sky. As long as you're on the right angle, And then you can see every plane if he's on that side or on that side. And that's very accurate. And that's really when a rifle has a little pin on the end. And a pin at the beginning. You're aligning 2 points. That's how... Anybody asks me, how do you do it? I told them, well, there's a big company that put their special piece of equipment. It is a very specialist piece. Don't doubt... But now they took it down. Now they put the cables underneath. But now I don't need it anymore. Now, this is a radar check in Tofshin Ein Aleph. When this problem started, this is how we found about it. Going through the base of the cross, you see the ones coming up from the... You're coming from the southeast. And those are taking off. And the ones with the bow are the planes who are taking off, just nipping the edge of it. It's quite scary. This is the radar check as well, what they did before the base in. You can see the same. I think we should be, finished here somewhere. Oh, this is the landing. Somebody asked me, I can't remember who it was, somebody asked me here in Golders Green about when they land, that you see that they fly to little Kiryat Sefer Yerushalayim. So this is where the way they land at the day is the way they come in. You see this diagram over here? That's how they fly. Now, at night, they cannot do that because you're not allowed to fly Arnav at night. You can't use the eyes at night because it might be dark. Should be dark. But to use the ILS, there's a security problem. To take them out 10 nautical miles from here will take the place that you don't want to go at night. And they don't want the planes flying there, bequeous, constantly at a low altitude. And therefore, they have them flying in from the sea and all this problem. That's, I think we're finished over here. And thank you very much for giving me a few minutes extra time.